This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and of course, once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is an opportunity for you to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions related to health, general medicine, working out certain discrete health problems. And today, I'm capably assisted by Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, as always. And how are you doing today, Layla?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good, good. We're settling into Indian summer here in New York.
It's yeah.
My favorite time of the year. It's really, you know, it's,
yes.
Sometimes
yeah.
we get these beautiful crystal clear days, reminiscent of 9/11, that beautiful crystal sky blue day that was, of course, marred by a terrible tragedy. I always, you know, this time of year, I was kind of a little bit of sometimes a feeling about that. Particular
yeah.
event. So the weather triggers those memory associations.
Yeah, so, it was a crystal clear day, right?
Indeed.
We're getting lots of that. Yeah.
15 years ago. So in the news, a very interesting story is, you know, it's one of those I told you so stories because how long have we been talking about this? This is from the New York Times. And the New York Times featured a story. It was actually about a week or so ago. How the sugar industry shifted blame to fat. Newly discovered documents show that there was a cover up. The sugar industry. This is really, really reminiscent of the tobacco industry, isn't it? You know, with the movie about with Russell Crowe about the whistleblower within the tobacco industry.
What was that movie called? That was great.
Yeah. The sugar industry paid scientists in the 1960s to downplay the link between sugar and heart disease and promote saturated fat as the culprit instead. Wow.
It's criminal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, criminal.
We need some perp walks. We need some perp walks, some criminal indictments.
Yeah. Right. People need to go to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and why? I mean, you know, because you think, okay.
It's criminal.
it's not only, it's criminal, but it's also the liability is enormous. You know, when somebody picks your pocket, steals your wallet, okay, you know, you may be a couple hundred bucks down. But when somebody broadcasts information that is distorted, that was known to be false and belied by the science, and this is responsible for the sickness and deaths of countless Americans, I mean, this is really, really problematic. Of course, you know, nobody's going to be held accountable for this. The internal sugar industry documents recently discovered by a researcher at the University of California, so they had to do some sleuthing. They were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. I have to look at that article and we'll delve into that in one of our, podcasts, perhaps. It suggests that 5 decades of research into the role of nutrition in heart disease, including many of today's dietary recommendations, may have been largely shaped by the sugar industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk about science. Well, but science is not pure, you know, intellectuals, you know, sitting in a laboratory with test tubes. There's a lot of politics.
Brought to you by M&M Mars.
Right. Well, specifically a trade group called the Sugar Research Foundation paid 3 Harvard researchers the equivalent of about $50,000 in today's dollars to publish a 1967 review of sugar, fat, and heart research. And
how dare they call themselves a research foundation?
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
I mean, of course, it's at this very fly by night, institution, Harvard University, right?
Oh,
yeah. Pretty amazing. and you know, this is buried in the annals of history because the Harvard scientists and the sugar executives with whom they collaborated are no longer alive. This happened. What were you doing in 1967?
I was three.
Not a heck of a lot. So I think I was in high school then. So, you know, that's when the consensus got shaped. And it was a consensus that lasted decades and still has its residuals today. So
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So the final line in the story is, by today's standards, they behaved very badly.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you can read all about it because I posted that story. And, of course, it's a big story in the New York Times as of about as a week or so ago. So anyway, let's get to – but, you know – we've been on this kick for a while.
Totally.
And, you know, the late, great, Dr. Robert Atkins, of course, would, exult with the news. Unfortunately, it, you know, he had to die to be vindicated, which so often happens to pioneers.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And now, I don't know if you noticed, Dr. Hoffman, but any ingredient label I'm reading, even something as innocent, seemingly innocent, as a jar of good quality salsa, there's sugar in it.
Yep.
What's going on here?
Yep.
It doesn't matter that it's organic. I mean, they've snuck it literally into everything.
Right. And
the food is tasting sweeter. It's just wrong. Yeah.
And as a result of being on the Whole 30 diet, you know, the Whole 30 diet has a prohibition against sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have, you know, one of the things that it does is it makes you really pay attention to labels. And so, you know, you go, okay, this is healthy. This is from Whole Foods. This is from, you know, Trader Joe's, and it's natural. And maybe it's even organic, but it may have, you know, weasel words like, you know, fruit concentrate or.
Yes, evaporated cane juice.
Cane juice, yeah. Which sounds, you know, that sounds really natural, right? You know?
Right,
So anyway, so these are some of the issues that we're grappling with. Why don't we take some questions?
Yeah. We've got an email from Cindy. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thank you so much for your radio program. I can't even begin to tell you how much I've learned and listen faithfully to each and every show.
Wow.
Thank you, Cindy.
Yep.
Cindy says, my 19-year-old daughter has had mono 3 times over the course of her young life. Now, last year, her doctor suggested we have her tonsils removed because she's had repeated strep infections over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I had such high hopes that perhaps she would finally have a long stretch of health. So far, she's not had any strep infections, but the mono has made another appearance.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter eats a very healthy diet. She exercises regularly. Unfortunately, she does have issues with getting a continuous night of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But makes an effort by going to bed early every night. She's 19.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, clearly this is a very typical kind of patient who comes to visit us at the Hoffman Center.
Yeah.
And what I notice is that, you know, over the summer, we usually get several patients like that because what's happened is these are young, gals or young guys who either in high school, or in college crashed and burned. You know, they get their first case of mono. And usually mono, ideally you get it and, you know, you're maybe sick for a couple of weeks and then it resolves and you move on. But some people get into sort of a chronic pattern. And this is a variant on chronic fatigue syndrome, where people just can't seem to shake a virus. And, you know, whether it's mono or whether it's just a chronic debilitated state of the immune system, becomes unclear after a while. And, so these, you know, good diet, of course, is the foundation.
Right.
Adequate sleep. Sometimes it's a question of, excess exercise. You know, we see these.
Yes.
Sometimes, kids are pressured into very competitive sports and they push the envelope and they're running on fumes. Maybe they're dieting excessively to meet a certain weight requirement. And they get sick. And then, of course, so that our job is to build up the immune system with things like intravenous vitamin C. And then you can maybe go through some of the things that supplements that are supportive to the immunity.
First and foremost, because she's had it 3 times already, Dr. Hoffman, I think you would agree, the immune drip that you do. I mean, that particular IV therapy is fantastic. We've seen over and over again how well patients are able to do. But besides cleaning up the diet and getting rid of the first topic we were talking about, sugar, because we know how that suppresses the immune system, you want to make sure that you're eating healthy, antioxidant-rich foods, but you want to include supplements like vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc. You want to include things like olive leaf, possibly some oregosilin, even in this case, some NAC, N-acetylcysteine, to
That's
help
very helpful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boost your glutathione
sure.
mm-hmm. levels as well.
Yeah, whenever, you know, sometimes, occasionally I have a really bad flu or virus. It's infrequent now, but, you know, We're susceptible to that. We see a lot of sick patients. They breathe on us. We get stuff.
Yeah.
And the last time I was sick with a fever, I took N-acetylcysteine at a really high dose. And it really powered me through it very quickly because a viral illness usually depletes glutathione. And ironically, the very remedy that people reach for when they have a fever depletes glutathione, which is, of course, Tylenol, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So uh-huh. I always keep some NAC handy, in case I get sick. And of course, and you're well aware, this just went, through a catalog of nutrients that are helpful, but, vitamin
There's
D.
Also,
vitamin
Dr.
D, of
Hoffman,
course.
I want to take the vitamin D. Absolutely. I'd want to get her vitamin D levels checked. People, I think, are too quick to take Tylenol or an NSAID to reduce their fever.
Yep.
The fever is your immune army battling at war?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it not? I mean, when is the time to take something like Tylenol? I mean,
well, it depends. I think for kids, there's a much higher threshold, and there are concerns of with certainly aspirin with very young kids with Reye syndrome. So generally,
right,
they say
they
take Tylenol.
Aspirin.
But I think
yeah.
Tylenol may have subtle harmful effects, and we allow kids to go to a higher temperature than adults. A temperature mm-hmm. of 103 in an adult is devastating. A temperature of 103 in a kid is actually fairly routine. But there are points where the discomfort is enormous and, you really want to bring down the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe the threshold should be set a little higher, not, 100.5, but maybe, temperature of 102 or 102 and a half in an adult might call for something to reduce the fever. Did we mention, of course, HCC, Empower?
Oh, yes.
That mm-hmm. is something that boosts immunity. Transfer factor, too. Transfer factor will also
transfer
be something
factor.
That will help patients.
Colostrum, yeah.
Which is derived from colostrum, which mm-hmm. is transfers, two different types of immunity. One is T cell immunity or, the mm-hmm. innate immunity. And the other is the acquired immunity, which is B cell dependent, and that's transfer factor. That gets a boost from transfer factor.
What would you think of thymic extract in this particular case, the ProBoost?
Could be helpful, yeah. But we mostly use ProBoost in patients with cancer because we know that T cells mm-hmm. and natural killer cells play a role in cancer. But there may be a role for this here.
Yeah.
And, once again, I put in a pitch for very custom or tailored nutritional support from, qualified nutritionists like yourself or, maybe a medical nutritionist to provide a medical perspective on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One thing that...
Especially if she needs a drip, yeah.
Yeah, because only doctors can administer IV nutrients. We know that high-dose vitamin C has a powerful antiviral effect.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually was first demonstrated. Do you know that it was first demonstrated in the 1940s by
really?
A guy named Frederick Klenner, who was using it for polio in those days when they had nothing, of course, against polio before the vaccine. And he was just one isolated guy who was pioneering the use of intravenous vitamin C in those days with some degree of success. But then, when the vaccine came along, it was all about the vaccine.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. All right, Cindy. Oh, best of luck with your daughter. But yes, she does need a workup.
Mm-hmm.
And then a good regimen. All right. We've got an email from David. Good morning, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thank you both for your continued dedication and extending your knowledge and experiences with all of us. You're very welcome. My mother was recently diagnosed with a problem with her parathyroid glands. She was told they were producing excessive calcium in her bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
They also continued to explain that it had not yet affected her bones nor kidneys, but they recommend surgery because they claim the condition will only worsen. She's 83, mm-hmm. doesn't take any prescriptions, mm-hmm. had her knee replacement, and had cataract surgery.
Okay. Yeah.
What's your opinion, Dr. Hoffman?
Well, okay, so this is a condition called hyperparathyroidism, which is very common in, you know, starting in middle age in women.
Mm-hmm.
They produce too much PTH, parathyroid hormone, which is produced by four tiny glands that sit on top of the thyroid. That's why they're called parathyroids. And there's a couple of reasons for this. One actual reason for this is due to vitamin D deficiency. And so you can actually bring, paradoxically, you can bring calcium down, because too much calcium will really, super high doses of vitamin D will raise your calcium. But
mm-hmm.
also inadequate vitamin D will cause your parathyroids to go into overdrive to supply your body with the calcium that is not being properly absorbed because you don't have vitamin D on board. So treatment, you know, that I think only is successful in a relative minority of cases. So let's assume that her vitamin D has been checked and it's okay and she's not going to respond to vitamin D. What you have is you have these little tiny glands which have switched into overdrive, and they're working independent of a regulatory mechanism. You know, a lot of the glands are in a finely tuned regulatory mechanism, like a thermostat, you know, to keep the
mm-hmm.
room perfectly at the right temperature, whatever, 72 degrees, wherever you set it. The
mm-hmm.
thermostat is overridden by these runaway parathyroid glands, and the only way to treat that is to remove one or several of them. And this is a very specialized type of surgery that only a very small subsection of surgeons do, but it's actually not a very dangerous type of surgery, because the thyroid sitting in your neck, very superficial. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not like having abdominal surgery or heart surgery. In an older person, you always want to avoid radical types of surgery. But, you know, you have a couple of choices. One is you can sort of wait and see, and, you know, maybe the problem will not progress. But the doctor may be correct that there's nothing that prevents this from getting worse and worse and eventually causing, what's the problem with the kidneys? Kidney stones. It will actually create calcium kidney stones.
Yeah.
And it will rob the bones of calcium. It'll take the calcium out of the bones, put it in the bloodstream. And then you also get these weird mental side effects, you know, which are, you know, some patients with hyperparathyroidism, very high calcium, have psychological and psychiatric issues around that.
Wow.
They just feel really bent out of shape. So, you know, you might get a second opinion from another
mm-hmm.
doctor who you might elicit an opinion like, okay, we'll just keep monitoring it. We can wait and see. Maybe it won't get worse. When it gets worse, when it crosses the line where there really is danger, we'll do surgery, and thereby taking a more conservative approach. But, you know, surgery
Dr.
is the
Hoffman,
answer ultimately.
Yeah. What if her vitamin D level is a 7?
Well, then she has a very good chance of taking vitamin D and normalizing her parathyroid, and then thereby normalizing her calcium.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. So hopefully her vitamin D level was checked.
Right.
All right.
And incidentally,
right.
you know, just for the record, let's say somebody comes in and they have very bad osteoporosis, and it's not clear why. You know, like, what are some of the reasons they have someone might have osteoporosis? Maybe they have a strong family history. Maybe they don't eat any calcium. They're on a very, you know, like a vegan, very skimpy diet. They're just juicing and eating raw foods. Maybe they've taken an acid blocker for a long time. Maybe they've taken steroids. Maybe they're very sedentary, so they get kind of like that weightlessness effect that the astronauts get when they lose bone. There's a lot of different reasons for osteoporosis to occur. Maybe they have celiac disease and they're not absorbing. That's something worth looking at. So we look at these underlying causes for osteoporosis, but one of the tests we run is a PTH test, because that can be a hidden cause of osteoporosis. This production of parathyroid hormone robs calcium from the bones, and it ends up in the bloodstream, And then it gets deposited in various parts of the body where it doesn't belong.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. David, thank you for your question, and best of luck with your mother.
Sure.
Okay. You know, I would like to mention the right vitamin D test, because I don't know about you, Dr. Hoffman, but on occasion I still see the, quote, wrong vitamin D test, if we could still even call it that, that
yeah.
125
right.
dehydroxy. It should be 25-OHD, 25-hydroxy
mm-hmm.
right. vitamin D
yep.
is the right blood test.
Yep.
Okay, David, thank you very much for your question. Let's see here. We've got an email from Jerry. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. My wife suffers from restless leg syndrome that seems to have gotten worse over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Any nutritional advice that might help alleviate her symptoms?
Well, the most important nutritional cause of restless leg syndrome is iron deficiency. And while many cases of restless leg syndrome don't respond to restoration of normal iron, some do. And it's worth checking not just iron levels, but ferritin levels.
Yeah.
And we aim for a ferritin that is over 50 or 70.
Yeah.
To see if that can help.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, restless leg syndrome, not to be confused with, Charley horses or sometimes
muscle
spasms,
cramps.
Muscle cramps and
right.
spasms, which is often alleviated by magnesium. And in some cases, I think magnesium can be helpful for restless leg syndrome. You know, restless leg syndrome is thought to be a neurological disease with some similarities to Parkinson's, at least in the, not that you're going to get Parkinson's if you have restless leg syndrome, but it responds to actually some Parkinson's drugs, like Mirapex.
Wow.
And so, you know, things that support dopamine production, I would say vitamin B6 would be important for normalizing dopamine.
What about folate for restless legs?
Well, there's some evidence that in, you know, nocturnal leg cramps in pregnant women, they respond to B vitamins, you know, which would include folate, B6, maybe a good B complex would be warranted.
Wow, wow. Jerry mentions that his wife is postmenopausal, and she is always cold with some hair loss, based on thyroid testing by a very integrative physician here in New York, her thyroid is not the issue.
Okay, well, the integrative doctors tend to be more aggressive about thyroid replacement, so let's stipulate that her thyroid is okay, and it's not about her thyroid.
Yeah, so it could be the iron if she has hair loss.
That's
something.
Which is another thing that's associated with low iron levels. But since she's postmenopausal, less likely in a woman, because once you stop having menstrual bleeding, it's more likely that you'll be able to normalize your iron. You know, what percentage of women who are premenopausal in the United States would you say are not necessarily iron deficient, but iron insufficient? I would say maybe 50% or more.
Yeah, 50% or more, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, always like hovering at borderline. Yeah.
Right. So it's it's all the more remarkable that they can think straight and function, right? Between the sleeplessness, you know, the demands of the sandwich generation, the kids as well as the parents, you know, and they're nutritionally deficient, probably in several nutrients, probably vitamin D, probably iron.
Right.
Usually
and they still
magnesium,
go and run marathons.
Usually magnesium. Right. They try, right. And now they're expected to be, you know, super moms. Okay.
Right.
Yep. So it's a big problem. All right. Well, good point at which to pause, because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. So flash forward, give us a little bit of a preview of what we'll tackle in part two.
Okay. I'm taking thyroid medication, but my hair is still shedding and I've lost my eyebrows.
Okay. We'll tackle that question in part two of today's Television Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We invite you to send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll answer them as soon as we can. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is Intelligent Medicine.